Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning. Welcome to All Us Home. My guest today is Steve Greenfield. I'm 54. My guest today is Steve Greenfield, and we're going to talk about the importance.
Hello, hello.
Hi, Steve. We're on the air. We're going to talk about the importance of AOC, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. So, Steve, you ran for Congress, and I'm sure you've been watching AOC for a while. What's your thoughts?
I think that she serves, you know, a vitally important function. I actually don't want to single her out, because when you single someone out, you're kind of indicating to people where to cut the head off the chicken. You know, there is Ariana Presley, there is Ilhan Omar. She is, you know, part of a group of people, first-year members of Congress that came together. I guess she certainly appears to be the most digital media savvy of the bunch, and in some other ways able to attract more negative attention for what she does. But yeah, she serves an incredibly, incredibly important function in that she is doing something we don't traditionally see progressives within the Democratic Party do, which is that she is calling out right-wing action and hypocrisy inside her own party, and not just inside her own party, but inside the elected officials in Congress from her own party. You know, this is a departure from the traditional approach that you've seen earlier progressive Democrats take, in which there was encouragement brought about by people, you know, to move them to the left. There was a general sense of traditional loyalty, and Ocasio-Cortez is doing something that's outside the norm. She's calling out her party's own people, including the ones that are in the positions of highest power.
So how upset do you think Nancy Pelosi is?
I think she's making no secret of how upset she is, because I think that in some ways it goes beyond politics. I think, you know, this is an indicator of generational change, and it's probably something that the old guard of the Democratic Party that's been in power since 1993, and I would argue, you know, actually since 1976, when Jimmy Carter became the first formal, you know, corporatist right-wing nominee that they were bringing into the fore. But at least since 1992, that we're seeing, you know, elderly people from the old guard seeming to have concern about whether they've left behind institutions that will continue to control, and steer the direction of the party after they're gone, quite frankly, right? I mean, we're talking about people who are 80 years old. We're talking about people who are 80 years old that are finding themselves threatened by people who are under the age of, you know, under the age of 30, or just barely above the age of 30, people in their 30s who grew up in a different time, who grew up not presuming at the model set by Bill Clinton in the 1990s is the only model, the only viable model. And quite frankly, as you know, as certainly you would think any decent, humane thinking person would be, not particularly impressed with the results of the old guard's politics.
Right. It's truly amazing to see how vocal she is when most of the freshmen, or the freshmen over the years, has been silent and not said anything. So as a Green, Steve, do you think Ocasio-Cortez helps the Green Party? Go ahead.
Yes, this is going to be, you know, controversial, something, you know, of course, you know, that I do not shy away from in any particular situation. There are a lot of people in the Green Party and in the traditional left that even beyond the Green Party and not part of the Green Party, using a term that I disapprove of strongly called sheepdog. You know, there are people in our party who refer to people like Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez as sheepdogs, in that they raise they dangle, you know, the possibility that the Democratic Party could become progressive at the end of a stick, so that people will keep following that cart or riding in that cart or propelling that cart down the corporate Democratic Party track instead of going off somewhere else. And that has been in the case with people in the past. Like Dennis Kucinich in particular, back in 2004, who was very clear about having his campaign operatives actually, I don't know if this happened to you, it happened to me and many people I knew during the Democratic primaries in 2004, were actually calling Green Party members on the phone off, you know, voter enrollment lists to encourage us to switch to the Democratic Party so that we could vote for Kucinich and help him win primaries. And that was the most aggressive actual case of sheepdogging that I've ever seen, because all you need to do is look at the number of Greens, the total number of Greens altogether, to figure out that the most, that even 100% of enrollment of all Greens into Democratic Party primaries could have provided no more than, you know, like 0.5% improvement in Dennis Kucinich's results. So this sales pitch was definitely being made to use progressive bait to undermine the Green Party. And what's happening with Ocasio-Cortez is fundamentally different from that. She's actually going directly at her own party about the shortcomings of her own party. And because of her media reach, she's doing a much better job of getting the attention of idealistic young people, and maybe even, you know, older people that are just reaching their breaking point with being, you know, continually disappointed by what happens when they put all their electoral eggs in the Democratic Party basket. And I think that the more that she does what she's doing, rather than quite the contrary, rather than attracting people like us to vote for Democrats and waste our votes and end up electing corporatists, I think she's strengthening people's resolve around getting these ideas turned into actual policy, and drawing people's attention to the fact that it's the Democrats, as much as the Republicans, that they're equal partners in this. And, you know, when I say it, when I get on a podium and say that, it's easy to say, okay, well, you know, he's interested in getting publicity for himself. He's running for office. He's trying to attract new members to his party. You know, he's doing what he, but when someone that's inside the Democratic Party is doing that, when someone inside the party is saying my party is an obstacle, is the major obstacle, and we need to get our own house in order, you know, that is something that's going to help the Green Party, because as people start looking at their general election options once primaries are over and realize that once again, depending on where they live, that the Democratic Party process and the DCCC and wherever these finances are coming from and the editorial board of the New York Times and every, you know, has let them down once again. People that have not gotten in the habit, younger people who are not yet in the habit, who don't already have 30 consecutive votes for the Democratic Party, under their belts, that haven't had their idealism shattered, that don't vote like hostages yet, that haven't had that beaten into them over the years, will look at Green Party candidates for the general election. I fundamentally believe that because of the stark difference in the way she articulates her criticism of Democrats versus the way more open sheepdogs in the past and some still currently are doing that now.
About 2 years ago, Dennis Kucinich was in Albany at a protest, and I approached him and I asked him, the Republicans were in control of the House at that point, and I asked him, do you think that the Democrats will regain control of the House of Representatives? And he looked at me and he said, what difference does it make? So he's fully aware of how corporatists the Democrats have become.
Right. Well, let's bear in mind something about Dennis Kucinich, you know, that's kind of forgotten to history at this point. Dennis Kucinich was basically in 2004, in exchange for being able to have time at the podium at the Democratic Party convention to articulate his personal, more progressive vision of where the party should be heading, was told that he would have to endorse John Kerry, that he would have to formally endorse John Kerry, you know, in advance and at the podium in order to be granted time to speak to the progressive vision. And that basically they were saying, if you don't use your podium time to sheepdog people to this right-wing militarist candidate that's promising to escalate the war in Iraq, we're not giving you the podium at all. Okay. And he acceded to that. He went and did that, which disappointed quite a few of us. But then immediately thereafter, there was, you know, a redistricting in Ohio where he was a congressman. And each, I don't know, you know, people don't really know this, but the leadership of the parties get to participate in the haggling over how district lines are being redrawn. And what ends up happening when a number of House seats are being reduced due to population changes is that party leadership actually picks which candidates they're willing to lose, you know, to let the other party, you know, be able to adjust for population and draw different lines. They divided up Kucinich's district. They ended up districting him into changing his district with a majority of his voters to a location in which he did not reside. And then he lost his next, like they threw him out of the House. The Democrats threw Kucinich out of the House. He did everything that they demanded of him. He sheepdogged progressives into a militarist candidate, you know, that a mind-boggling concept in 2004, right? When almost all Democrats at least presented themselves as being anti-war in Iraq, that they were nominating someone who was promising to escalate the war in Iraq, just as Lyndon Johnson had escalated the war in Vietnam. And then after Kucinich agreed to do whatever they were demanding of him to sheepdog progressives into the ballot line, they went and terminated his congressional district. They kicked him out of Congress anyway. And so, of course, now at this stage of his life, having been subjected to that, I'm not in the least bit surprised to have him, you know, observing that his party is as much the problem as the Republicans, because he was trying to do what he thought that the party power was demanding, and that they wanted a big tent, and they kicked him out of the tent. He did everything that they demanded, and then they immediately kicked him out. So sure, you know, and that's the thing, is that people like Dennis Kucinich, who experienced this, who had to learn the hard way what the rest of us, you know, say, like, you know, you don't have to learn this the hard way, you know. But if there were some way to get people like Kucinich to come out in a more public way and say, you know, the tent is not that big, you know, we sheepdog you into it, and then they slaughter you, to say the kinds of things that we say all the time, right, which is that the Democratic Party is the place where movements go to die. And that is the truth, right? They dangle some bait, you follow the bait into the trap, and then they eat you. You know, that's what the Democratic Party does. And so I'm going to just bring that full circle, or going back to Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, which is that so far she doesn't seem to be granting the traditional power structure of the party the demands that they're making to stop calling public attention to the shortcomings of the Democratic Party itself. She's, you know, holding her own out there. And quite frankly, to a considerable degree, she's making, you know, the cranky old people look like cranky old people. She never loses her smile. She never backs up, you know. And so I believe that this very different presentation can have, and is it going to keep some people in the Democratic Party? Sure it will. You know, because she's a lightning rod and people are looking, you know, towards her and want to support her. But there's also going to be a lot of people who are going to recognize in their own districts, people who don't have progressive candidates available to them, that it's time to start applying pressure. You know, I think Greens can actually use the message of the four first year members and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez in particular, to highlight to people that, you know, if you try to do this in the Democratic Party, that the Democratic Party itself is going to attack you. And why do you want to subject yourself? I think that our candidates can very effectively communicate within the framework that she has established to draw idealistic voters away in the general election, which is something that other earlier progressive Democrats have created very much the opposite pressure, you know, of telling people that only working inside is a way to create progress. I think that, you know, the way that the Democratic Party is reacting to her is showing what trying to go inside, you know, will actually do to you.
What I found very interesting is when Kucinich was primaried, he was primaried against Marcy Kaptur. Now, Marcy Kaptur was also a Democratic incumbent in the House, but Marcy Kaptur was pro-life, and there were no Democratic women to come out and say, like they did against Casey when Bill Clinton was first elected. They didn't come out and say, you know, we're troubled by your pro-life stand, you know, we're pro-church. They didn't say anything about that. She got elected. And Kucinich was kicked out. End of story.
Yep, it was just kicked out. Exactly. They created a race in which the district that he would have to run in already had its own incumbent as a resident of the district. It wasn't even like that he was running in an open seat. He was running for a seat that was already held by Democrats, and they drew the district in such a way that even among its Democrats, it contained a higher percentage of, you know, suburban white, you know, more likely to be conservative Democrats, you know, property holding conservative Democrats than the district he had previously that included his own home, which was, you know, much more diverse, much lower in income, and much more likely to need the benefit of progressive politics in order to improve their own lives in their district. And of course, that's exactly what they did. They sent him, you know, right into a Wall Street environment, where there was already an incumbent who had habitual voters, you know, that were voting for that incumbent. They kicked him out. That's what they did. They kicked him out. There's no other, you know, there's no way to soft pedal what happened to Kucinich. The Democratic Party kicked him out of the House. And it's not an isolated incident, right? They kicked out Cynthia McKinney in Georgia. Mm-hmm. They actually kicked her out twice. And they didn't even have to redistrict her to make that happen. They just heavily financed primary opponents against her, and they got away with that once, and then she came back and retook her House seat, and then they kicked her out again. So, you know, you hear people talking about this all the time. You've heard Andrew Cuomo. I heard Andrew Cuomo on WAMC last week, possibly the week before, you know, being interviewed by Alan Chartok, in which he was going on and on about how, you know, the only lesson to be learned from the victory of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez is that voter turnout is key, and that Joe Crowley was a much better legislator and much more important to have his seat preserved by the party. And to tell you the truth, it sounded to me, by the way that he was talking, that there is a possibility that they're going to put Crowley back into the primary next year. You know, and then just do a better get out, to try to do a better get out the vote. He kept using that phrase, right? I mean, I run for office, so I use that phrase a lot. That's what it's all about, right? Mm-hmm. Which is getting people out of their house and to the polling place and making sure they vote. I got a very strong sense from what Andrew Cuomo was saying that he is going to be supporting Crowley to come back and take his seat back. You know, we'll see how that happens next year. I think that's going to be shown to be a fool's errand, because she is wildly popular among the residents of her district. And, you know, they will just work that much harder at getting out the vote if, you know, last year's loser, you know, tries to come back again. But that's another thing, I guess, that also makes her a little bit different than the other three first year members, is that Crowley was, you know, they have these positions, you know, the majority leader, the Speaker of the House, the majority leader, that party whip. You know, they have different titles for people that indicate where they are in the hierarchy in Congress in terms of power, and handing out appointments and four kind of things that happen inside the legislative structure in Congress. And Joe Crowley was the number four, you know, out of 220 people. He was the number four ranked Democrat in the House. And, you know, the other three want him back. They very, very much want him back. They couldn't believe that they lost him. You know, much is vested in the hierarchy, you know, because it has to do with committee appointments and, you know, and things like that. And they, I think they're going to try to bring him back. You know, we'll see what happens. But Cuomo sounded pretty certain that, they plan to bring him back and just work harder and spend more money.
I remember I had heard David Patterson a while back on the radio, and David Patterson had poo-pooed Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, and he made a prediction that she will be primaried and she will lose. So the party structure is really hoping for that. In the case that that does happen because of her Twitter following, I don't believe she's going to go away. What do you think?
No, she's not going to go away. It's you know, that train's her train's left the station. Whatever different expressions people want to use, right? Maybe that wasn't quite, maybe it's that older one, you know, trying to close the barn door after the horses have run free. She's out there. She's out there. Mm-hmm. She's famous. She is invited on television shows because she gets ratings, right? I mean, and she gets ratings for all of the obvious reasons. She's articulate. She's intelligent. She's attractive. She's, you know, she's very impromptu. She doesn't have to, you get no sense when you're talking to her that she has to sit around and calculate an answer like you used to get that impression with Obama, because he would always pause and think before replying to a question. She's very off the cuff. She's very at ease and natural. She's not going anywhere. You know, even if they kick her out, you know, she's not going anywhere. I would keep an eye on whether she might need to be, you know, if she were to lose it. I don't believe she will lose. I mean, I think that the, you know, the corporatists do not understand her district, do not understand that she won the election, that she wasn't winning it with, you know, a massive voter registration drive that brought a bunch of new Spanish-speaking voters into the ballot booth to help her win. All the surveys showed that she was elected. You know, there's a lot of single family, two story homes in that part of Queens, in that part, you know, that's where I'm from. And she was supported by ordinary middle-class, you know, freestanding home owning Queens white people. And they're not going to walk away from her. I would, you know, love to see the centrists, the corporatists actually make this effort and pour $15 million into it next year and then get their butts kicked. I would love to see that happen, because I fundamentally believe that the voting pool that she attracted for 2018 has no reason to abandon her. They chose her over Crowley. And, mm-hmm. and you know, this mocking tone that Pelosi and Cuomo make about how her district, for in terms of general election, is so overwhelmingly Democrat enrollment. And of course, that's true, right? This is the Bronx and Queens. Yeah. This is as safe a district as could possibly exist. There's absolutely no possibility that a Republican can be in play in this particular district. That's true. But that doesn't mean in and of itself that the majority of those Democrats want to see a return to Crowley, because if they wanted to see a return to Crowley, you would have seen a much closer primary. You know, yeah, get out the vote, you know, was key, but you don't win with a 75% margin a primary just because, you know, somebody got complacent and didn't do as aggressive a get out the vote campaign as they might have in the past when they didn't have a primary opponent. Like, a margin of victory that substantial indicates that much of the habitual voting base of that district decided to go with her instead of with him. So I'd love to see this happen. I'd love to see how it plays out, because I don't think, I think this would, be a serious blow to the corporatist wing, at least in the New York State Democratic Party. I think it would be a blow to Cuomo's power and make him vulnerable in a primary if he tries to go for a fourth term. So I double dog Darren to go ahead and do it. And I want to, mention to the Greens one more time that there is a fundamental difference between the way that she's presenting her program and the way that people that we have shrugged off as sheepdogs in the past are presenting their program. She is highlighting the shortcomings of her own party. And the response from the corporatists to dismiss her and to label her and to mock her is not the approach that the corporatists used to use when facing. They always tried to have a more cooperative relationship. So I want to allow Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez a great degree of latitude, because she's obviously not working by a sheepdog playbook. She's doing something new, and I think we should give her the space to see how it plays out. If it doesn't play out well, then we can return to our traditional vocabulary about that when that happens. But for the time being, I am very pleased that she is in Congress. I am very pleased that she is as telegenic and articulate as she is, and that she's, getting into traditional media and on the television programs. And, let's just wait and see, because it's, as far as I can tell, very much is likely to produce more results, more votes for Green Party candidates, not less, not fewer.
Now, do you think that Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez will serve as a lightning rod for real reform of the political situation in this country?
Well, she's already doing that, and I think she will continue to be a lightning rod about that. The question just becomes, what happens to that energy? I don't know. We won't know till 2020 when we see what the primary field looks like, right? If the Justice Democrats or whatever it is they call themselves are going to put more primary candidates in against, entrenched incumbents that are from the Wall Street and War, dominant wing of the party, if they're going to run more primary candidates, as she has said they will many, many times, And see how that plays out. But will she continue to be that lightning rod? Absolutely. Nancy Pelosi is making sure of that.
Wow. A lot of people my age are looking at Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and kind of they grew up in the old school, and they're saying, Alexandria, shut your mouth. It's not your turn. You have to wait. And she doesn't care. She speaks her mind, which is good. And I think it like you said, she's a lightning rod. And I think people like her will be instrumental in enlightening the people to make a change in this country. Wouldn't you agree?
Yes, I do. And I want to say something about that wait your turn business, too. First of all, the older Democrats never told John Kennedy to wait his turn. They were thrilled that he wasn't waiting his turn. They were thrilled that somebody only 40 years old was running for president, and they rose up to his soaring rhetoric. Barack Obama ran for president after only 2 years in the Senate. I mean, how does an Illinois state legislator suddenly take it upon himself to run for president of the United States? The wait your turn thing, there is no turn to do the right thing, right? If somebody is about to invade a country for non-defensive reasons and kill a million people, there is no turn to wait. The time to act is now. Right. If somebody is putting immigrants and refugees into concentration camps, there is no turn to wait. The time to act is now. Sure, she's 29 years old. I don't know if she's past her 30th birthday yet, but I'm 57. And I'm doing the same things that she's doing, you know? She doesn't have to wait her turn. There is never a turn to wait in doing the right thing. There is never a turn to wait in solving a persistent problem. You know, that just shows kind of the arrogance of entrenched power that they tell people, right? They want her to pay dues, right? That's what wait your turn means, right? Pay your dues inside the system. They want her to support them in exchange for, you know, the stamp of approval to say, okay, this is a person who's now done enough negative things that we're granting her access to, you know, still has two or three positive things she thinks she can attempt, that we're now granting her access to be able to do that. And she's saying no. She's saying, no, I'm not going to support war. I'm not going to support corporate welfare. I'm not going to support fossil fuels. There's no turn to wait for that. I mean, the climate is burning up to a crisp right now. There's no time to wait. And I commend her in the strongest possible terms for clapping back the way she does when people tell her to wait her turn. There is no waiting to save a life. There is no waiting to save the climate. There is no waiting, you know, to get people out of concentration camps. And so I commend her in the strongest possible terms for her pushback against those kinds of you know, those kinds of remarks and pressures.
Now, everything that you're talking about today, I don't know how widely you know Greens across the country, but do you think Greens in different parts of this country embrace Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez as much as you do?
I see a roughly even split. I see a split between people who feel the way I do and people who are insisting that this is just the most appealing sheepdog they've ever put forward. But it's very clear that they have not put her forward, right? I mean, that's the thing I keep reminding people. If she were bait to progressives to stay with the Democrats, then, you know, the things that Nancy Pelosi is saying would look very, very different. The things that Andrew Cuomo, if she were bait, would Andrew Cuomo be talking about running a corporatist against her to get her out? Mm. You know, so I see an even split, but I counsel those who are on the sheepdog side of that split to observe more closely what the corporatist Democrats are saying about her and what they're threatening to do about her seat. You know, if they were using her as bait, they would be gentle about her, even in rejecting her policy proposals. They would not be mocking her. They would not be talking about a primary opponent. They would be, you know, talking about protecting her and they would be talking about how progressive voices have always been an integral part of the Democratic Party, even in disagreeing, right? Even in disagreeing, if a Pelosi were disagreeing, they would, you know, she would be saying, I disagree with her proposals, but the progressive voice has always been an integral part of the Democratic Party tent, and we welcome her contributions to, you know, the way we, but that's, they're saying the exact opposite. They're not doing that. You know, if they were being the stick, dangling her as a carrot in front of us, that would look very, very different from what they're actually saying and doing. And so I just counsel other Greens to, you know, more closely observe the reaction of the mainstream of the Democratic Party and consider the possibility that she is an outlier, that she is her own person. She pulled off an upset victory by being intrepid on the ground with her campaign. And I would like all of us to give her a little bit of breathing space and show support for what she's doing, because it increases the visibility of the conflict within the Democratic Party. And in so doing, will you know, illustrate to more young voters that have not been beaten into habitual voting yet, that idealism has a place in the general election and increases the possibility that when Green candidates are available to them, that that's where they'll cast their votes.
You know, this is going to, it continues to be a very interesting cycle. We still have a year and a half to go, less than a year and a half to go. And every day there's a new twist and turn. So, Steve, I really enjoy talking to you. And I'm sure there's many, many issues we'll be covering as this election cycle wears on. So you've been listening to Steve Greenfield talk about Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. So if you like the show, follow us on Twitter. Thanks, Steve, so much for taking the time to be on All Exits Closed. Have a great day.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you, everybody, for listening.
Bye-bye.